back, friends. It's another episode of the Buffer Podcast. And Joel, I feel like we get together each week, and then the next thing I know, it's October, and my house is transformed into there's not too many Halloween decorations where I'm at right now. Not that for folks that are watching or that are listening can see this, but it's October, and there's a ton of new content that has been birthed into the world. We're going to talk about it this week, and we have a special guest with us. But Joel, how are you feeling knowing that it's October? Because again, where we're at in the Midwest in Iowa, that means that winter is coming, and that means that it's going to be 30 below in like less than 100 days. I don't want it to happen, but it's just the reality of where we're at.
But it's going to be 86 this weekend. Woo! So when I'm coaching on the hot field turf of a fifth and sixth grade youth tackle football game on Sunday, we're going to have a bunch of hot kids who are mad that they're getting hit, and they're hot on top of it. So in classic Iowa fashion, it's going to be hot this weekend, and then in 2 weeks it's going to be negative something or probably snow. So right. But we're all Midwesterners here on the call, so we know what that's like.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. It is what it is, right? We could move if we wanted to. All right, so we have a very special guest this week who's no stranger to podcasts and not too far from where we're at. Joe Kilgallen, host of the Joe Kilgallen Podcast, a frequent guest on a bunch of different podcasts. One that we enjoy personally is Hunk with Mike Bridenstine. And Joe, are you in the city of Chicago? Or are you in the burbs? Where are you repping right now?
I'm repping the city. I'm inside the city.
Okay.
Not in a suburb. I'm not in a trendy part of town, though. I want to be clear on that, because a lot of times you talk to people and they're like, oh, you live in the city? Like, how far are you from downtown? I'm like 25 minutes. I'm closer to the airport, but I am within the city limits. Yeah. I pay city taxes and all that other fun stuff. So yes, I'm repping the Chicago area.
That's like, I had a cousin who she graduated from University of Iowa and moved to go to grad school at Northwestern, and then she got a job actually in what's now the Willis Tower, which I will always call the Sears Tower. And so she lived, like, I think she was 7 blocks away from the Sears Tower, so she could just walk everywhere. And when she would tell people she lived in Chicago, like, she'd come back to Iowa City for a football game or something, and all the Chicago and suburb students that go to that school are like, okay, so where are you living? And she's like, no, I live in downtown Chicago. She's yeah. like, I'm actually live in Chicago. I'm not Arlington Heights. I'm not where you guys are all from. She's like, I actually live right near where I work.
Although Arlington Heights may be the future home of the Chicago Bears.
So I was going to bring that up. How is the Windy City handling all that?
It's a mixed bag, because half the people are like, they got to stay in the city. Come on, it's Soldier Field and all that. But even that half wants a new stadium. They just want one in the city limits. And then another half is like, anything to get out. Soldier Field's a nice enough stadium, but they made a lot of mistakes. It's a small stadium in the NFL. It's right next to the lake, which often makes it the coldest place on the planet Earth during a game. You know, if it's 30 degrees outside, it's minus 50 inside. Yep. It's just a concrete slab, you know. And yeah, so it's not very convenient either. Even though Lakeshore Drive's right there, you have to park a mile away, walk a mile to get there. And I have friends who have season tickets who, if the game's not close, they're leaving in the third quarter. They don't stay for all four because they're the hell with it.
And there doesn't appear to be any real estate where they could build, you know, an indoor stadium there on the lake, so you get the best of both worlds.
Maybe if they went further south, they could probably find something, but definitely not where they're currently structured, or not in a spot that's convenient for people coming from all parts of the city and all that. But yeah, your friend who lived downtown, that does remind me, because when I do meet people who ask, oh, what part of Chicago, and they're disappointed when they find out it's not downtown, I have to remind them, how often do you see 11 and 12 year old kids riding their bikes up and down Michigan Avenue? They don't.
Right.
There are no little kids that families don't live downtown Chicago. It's nope. Young urban professionals or old people who, you know, single, you know, 50 year old, you know, in the Viagra Triangle, they call that one area over there.
Yeah.
Where, you know, those 58 year old dudes who got some money, or 24 year olds, and more power to them, right? I think they earned it. Who knows? But that's where that area is. So if you meet someone who's from Chicago, odds are they're from one of the neighborhoods. But you're right. You mentioned University of Iowa, and a lot of suburban Chicago people go there. A couple of my cousins, a couple of my cousins that live in the city, but my one cousin's from Morton Grove. reps Iowa and reps Chicago pretty hard, even though he's from the suburbs.
I think the best part, Joe, for people that are listening. So Joel has been to Oak Park when my mom still lived there. And the thing that people will always ask you is like, well, where should I go get food? And you don't want to, like, you never want to just tell them like the chain places. Not that there's anything wrong, like Portillo's, Giordano's, whatever, but everybody has those neighborhood spots. And in the Oak Park Berwyn area, Pete's Red Hots is one of them. And I took Joel there. And it's just nice.
Is that where I got the gyro that was like the best thing I've ever eaten in my life?
Yeah. Yeah. They just have like, it's just one of those neighborhood hole in the wall spots. And that's what, and we have places like that, but it's tough. You know, when people say, where should I go? I'm always like, well, if you go to, you know, Elmwood Park, Johnny's Italian Beef is pretty well known, but
Johnny's on North. Yeah.
It's gotten smaller over the years, but it's always like, I always try to think of, but then you feel like you're sending people down a rabbit hole, right? What they want you to say is like Lou Malnati's, or, you know, like it's a tough thing to, it's a tough question to answer. And it
people
comes up all the
say
time.
Whatever they could walk to, I feel right. A friend of mine, Sarah Perry, who's a funny comedian. She's from St. Louis originally. Her sister was driving up to visit her. And she said, my sister loves hot dogs and Chicago style hot dogs. Besides Wiener Circle, give me like some really great Chicago hot dog places. And so many people were commenting with some of the best places and places that are like, you know, not chains. They're kind of like what I call them is a joint. The place is a cool joint, you know? Yeah. And then she was like, ah, oh, too far. Too far. No, it's too far. It's like, hey, don't ask what the best hot dog places are in Chicago then. Make your post say, hey, what are the best hot dog places I could walk to from my house? Because clearly you don't want to know the best places in the city. Because
or better
just
yet,
gave you 10 and they all had a Chicago address and you're like, ah, too far. It's like,
and better yet, just pull your phone out and get your Maps app open and just type in hot dogs and whatever's in that circle that you want to walk to, just look at Yelp there instead of going to social media and there getting arguments with people.
Although you can't trust Yelp though, because sometimes someone they're flirting with the girl behind the register, the girl tells them they're a creep, and then the place gets one star, and that's not fair.
I feel like we should just send people to Uncle Remus or the original Maxwell Street location, just because we used to do that to some of my friends. I went to college in Davenport, and when they would come visit, I was like, here, let me take you. And all of a sudden you would just see their face on the ride to some of these places, and they would go, wait, where the hell are we going? And I'm like, just act cool. I'll get you in and out. I promise I've been going here since I was a kid. But no, I it's just one of those things that always it comes up without fail. And the same thing, right? I went to school, St. Ambrose and Davenport. I would always say I'm from Oak Park, originally Elmwood Park, because as soon as you try to claim the city, all the South Side, Brother Rice dudes were like, what street did you grow up on? And I'm like, oh, never mind. It was just Oak Park. But
I think
Go ahead, Joel.
I just think my favorite part, though, with all these cross street discussions that I have heard over the years being friends with Tony, is that Brido let me know the punchline of one of his jokes off his album, The Hungry Wolf Hunts Best, is like the area that you grew up in, Joe, which is that his karate at Irving Park and Cicero is like is right around where you grew up. And I thought that was a fun little tidbit that he gave me on that inside track on that joke. So
yeah, when I first met Mike Brian Stein, I was a fresh-faced 22-year-old starting out in stand-up comedy, and Mike Brian Stein was like, you know, one of the kings of the scene. And I remember he had that joke. It was like Irving Park and Cicero, and I was like, hey, I grew up like four blocks from there. I used to walk. There was a Sears right there. I used to hang out at.
There was a Sears.
Fantasy costumes and some other cool spots. Like where Irving Park and Cicero and Milwaukee meet for the original Six Corners in Chicago. But it's funny with Oak Park. There are parts of Oak Park and Elmwood Park that, to me, even though they're suburbs, are way more genuine Chicago than, say, Wicker Park or Bucktown or any of the trendy neighborhoods. Because anywhere you go in Oak Park and Elmwood Park, those are like lifelong Oak Park or Elmwood Park people, or even lifelong Chicagoans who just moved a mile west to get into the burbs for maybe a better high school or something. And where in Wicker Park, it's all transplants who just moved here 2 years ago, and then two more years from now, they're moving somewhere else. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, my mother grew up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and then moved to Chicago when she was like 21. So, look, hey, the more the merrier. Everyone travels around background. I get that. Nothing against that. But it's funny when I meet people like that. They've lived in Chicago for 18 months, and I hear them complaining about city politics or the weather or something. And I'm like, you got to earn it. You're new here. You're a rookie. Okay.
Right.
You're welcome, of course. Welcome aboard. But don't go claiming Chicago just yet. You know, you're in first grade. You got to work it through. I think in order to claim a city, you have to be there for 8 years. I say 2 terms.
Wow.
Two election cycles. And I'm not even saying you have to vote, but 2 election cycles.
Sure.
That's my philosophy. I was only in LA for 3.5 years, so I didn't even get 1 full term in.
I was going to say, you know, it's very true. And I feel like there are people that have earned the right, like my old man, who's a retired Chicago cop, did like, I don't know, 30 years on the job. Majority of those on the West Side, 11th Precinct, Harrison and Kedzie, one of the worst neighborhoods in the city. So he's earned the right to have, he can bemoan his taxes. But I'm going to segue into the battle this week with this. So when we lived in Elmwood Park, and I think I've shared this story before, but when my mom was still pregnant with me in 1982-ish, my dad was a young cop. They had just bought their house in Elmwood Park, like literally moving in. And this black Cadillac pulls up out in front of the house. And these guys, as my dad tells it, these guys are like, "Hey, come here." And he gets in, and you know, there are about 4 or 5 guys in this big black Cadillac, and they just kind of pull slowly down the street, and they're like, "So, new to the neighborhood?" And he's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "You're a police officer?" And he's like, "Uh-huh." Like, "Wife expecting?" "Uh-huh." "This is a very good neighborhood. You should know that. There's a lot of people that care about how everybody is." And like, so these guys were pretty much juiced in, right? I can't tell you their names.
Just wise guys, basically.
Yeah. And they took my, you know, 20.
Marty or Lombardo.
Right.
I'm guessing. Yeah.
Joey the Clown or whatever. Like, they took my 24 or 5-year-old dad around the block. And then he said he got out and he was like, "All right." And he wasn't even a cop in Elmwood Park. That was the interesting thing. But they just knew, right?
You know, what's interesting is that he technically shouldn't have been allowed to live on Elmwood Park if he was a Chicago cop. Chicago has a law.
This is very true.
Maybe they didn't have it back then, but Chicago's a law where if you're going to be, it's a city law. If you're going to work for the city,
very true.
The city. Same with firemen, teachers, whatever. Which I think kind of makes sense. But so I'm not, maybe in the 80s it was a different rule. Not trying to get dad in trouble.
I think
he's retired now. Right?
Let me
he's
say
that,
this.
He's got that pension.
He started on the job in Skokie and then moved to the city. So I think that was still the Skokie years.
Yeah, you can live in Chicago and then work in suburban. I've got a few friends who live in the city and they.
But like, you are correct. That rule is still very much a thing because he lives right now on like the north. Like his house is here and in Park Ridge is right across the street, basically. Like,
oh, I know exactly where your dad lives.
Yeah, he's right. Shout out to North Oliphant. Let's just say it. Go ding dong ditch my dad right by the Dairy Queen.
Oliphant, right across from the tracks.
Go take him some meatballs.
Look at this. This is awesome. The Oliphant crew. All right. This week on the Buffer Battle, we're going to talk about a couple of things. I'm going to make the case for the Many Saints of Newark, which obviously is connected to The Sopranos and the mob. Joel, you're going to talk about Venom, Let There Be Carnage, which is just, I did see it and it was just ridiculous. And then Joe, you're going to do Shang-Chi? I haven't even seen it. I feel really bad.
It's pronounced like Shang. Shang-Chi,
come on, Tony. Right? Yeah, and the Ten Rings.
Chinese pronunciation down.
I know.
By now.
I should know this. So it's going to be an interesting battle. And then Joe, I know you wanted to mention that Ted Lasso, the winner for September.
And you know, this is weird how this is all dovetailing. Because Joe, you just talked about Ted Lasso on your podcast today.
Big fan.
Flying solo. I wanted to compliment you on that because Tony and I both, you know, being morning radio guys, not having co-hosts for a long time, that is not easy to do what you've done the last couple of weeks of doing a solo podcast. And I loved what you said last week. I do my research for these things. I loved what
Good
you
man.
Said last
Thanks
week.
For listening. Yeah.
Where, where you said, I'm not a writer. I'm a thinker. I'm a thinker. And I thought that was brilliantly put because that's what I think I am too. I'm not a writer. I'm a thinker.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like a lot of stand-up comedians like to be like, I'm a comedian slash write. And some of them are, though. Some of them write for TV shows and stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And and in a way we are writers, but so much of stand-up material to me, I'm like, you thought of that and you said it out loud. It's not like you were slaving away, you know, behind an old school typewriter. Look at me. But thank you for the compliment on the solo podcast. I prefer a guest, but sometimes it's fun to go solo. So I've had some logistical problems the last couple of weeks. So
and I'll just put this out there for you, plug your Patreon account. I'm Team Jasmine. Just going to put that out there for the Disney princesses. Top five.
We did top five Disney princesses. Me and Mike Bryan signed for the Patreon. That's awesome. And just so everyone knows, we made sure the Disney princesses were 18 and older. And we also decided no animals.
Oh, no. Man. So Moana.
No Moana. Come on, man.
Moana.
Too little.
Is Cinderella 18 at the time? I don't think she's 18, is she?
It's kind of implied that she's 18. I mean, she looked 18. That sounded bad. That sounded real bad. But you know what I mean? I'm thinking about the 1939 Cinderella or whatever.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they were all trying to court some prince, which made me think they were, had to have been of legal age for, what was that, England? I don't know, you know, so.
Well, I was might have say, been 13 or 14, unfortunately, but.
Yeah, that's a hell of a list, though, because those are the movies that are just in my house with my kids as young as they are. They're just constantly on Disney Plus.
You're a dad, too, Joe, right? You've got some young ones?
I got two sons. I have a four-year-old and a two-year-old.
So wow. I have two sons and a daughter. I'm 10, 8, and 5 are the age of my kids, so.
Nice. Yeah, it's just, we are just living in the thick of the Disney Plus and everything else that they watch. All right, so buffer battle this week. I'm going to start with Many Saints of Newark, which again, I feel like this movie suffers from a couple of things. So if you pay attention to box office numbers like I do, it did not perform that well because it also was released same day on HBO Max. I think it did about $5 million. This is David Chase. This is the prequel to Sopranos, marketed as Who Made Tony Soprano, even though Tony Soprano appears in it very briefly. I mean, for almost an hour of the movie, Tony Soprano is like maybe 10 years old. And then for the back half, he's 16, 17, still in high school. What I like about Many Saints of Newark is that it stands alone. And I almost think, of course, you're not going to not market this as a Sopranos movie, but I almost think they did a disservice trying to connect it directly to this is how Tony Soprano came to be. I mean, yes, he's in there, his family's in there. You kind of get to see the Dickie Maltisanti character, but I enjoyed it just as a standalone film, as someone that has enjoyed mob movies throughout the course of my life. Rotten Tomatoes, I think the last time I checked, it was at like 74%. But there are some, and I don't know where you guys stand, or if you are Sopranos fans. I know that Joel, I don't even think, has gotten through the whole series. I'm fine with it. There are some Sopranos fans that are really pissed about this movie, and they felt like they were sold a bag of goods. It did take a while to make. Michael Gandolfini said he was 18 when he auditioned the first time, and he's 22 now, right? So COVID caused some delays. They had some reshoots. But Joe, because I don't know you, are you all in on Sopranos? Have you seen Many Saints? What's your take?
I have not seen Many Saints. And you're right, there are a lot of people upset on Twitter. I'll just say before I adjust my or address my Sopranos fandom, I wish people wouldn't let one thing ruin all the other things. You know, like I know people who love the Sopranos and they're mad at this movie and they're making it try to erase what was. I'm like, one doesn't have to do with the other. You know what I mean? These things could be separate. It shouldn't take your joy away. You know, I'm a big Cubs fan. Obviously, the way things ended recently is terrible, but it doesn't take away the joy I had when they won it all, right? I don't understand when people do that. I do like The Sopranos. It's brilliant television. The only thing is I would get into it with some friends of mine because I never thought it was as original as everyone thought. Because in my head, I'm like, they took a mob movie, made it a TV series. I'm like, yeah, that's original. But I mean, I've seen this style before. But I did love the show. I wasn't crazy about the finale. I need to rewatch it, though, because I've got a few friends who were also angry at the finale. Then they rewatched it during the pandemic. I feel like so many people rewatched during the pandemic, and now they're like, nah, I love the finale now. I think it was pretty brilliant. And, you know, the finale came out when I was like 21. So maybe I was just a little bit more like, oh, I wanted like, a blaze of glory. And, you know, you want really like a shootout or something definitive. Like, don't leave it open ended. But yeah, no, obviously wonderful acting. James Gandolfini, a tremendous actor, great, like pretty much awesome in everything he's done, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it always bothered him, from what I read about James Gandolfini, is that people only thought of him as this like mobster guy. Cause he kind of, he said in a lot of interviews that he hated the stereotype that, and that's why I think they took a couple years in between seasons at one point, right? You could correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember that was a thing where he was just kind of like, I'm over this idea that all Italian Americans are just a bunch of mafia guys. And, you know, because he was like an incredibly well-trained actor and everything like that. And he took it very seriously.
And that's actually my Gandolfini entry point, besides the fact of his brilliant performance as the limo driver in Home Alone 2. My experience with him was actually that I saw him in God of Carnage on Broadway, a play that he did with Jeff Daniels and a bunch of just other heavy hitter actors. I can't remember who else it was, but I remember everyone's like, that's Tony Soprano. And I hadn't seen any episodes of The Sopranos yet. That's a brilliant play, and he was phenomenal in it. And Jeff Daniels is one of these amazing actors who just happened to be in one of the funniest movies of all time in Dumb and Dumber. But my take, Tony, on The Sopranos is I'm about halfway through season four now. So I've gotten past this horrific mother. The mom just drives me nuts. And Vera Farmiga knocked it out of the park in Many Saints of Newark as this horrible, horrible mother that I don't know. Maybe I just have mother issues of my own. Mom, I know you listen. I love you very much. I don't have mom issues. But the whole thing with The Sopranos is, I think you're right, Joe. Just let things be, man. The Weezer Blue album and Pinkerton are so much better than the Teal and Red album, but that doesn't mean that the Teal and Red album suck. It just means that that's how brilliant the first two Weezer albums were. This Sopranos series was out of this world for many people. Here's the thing. You two just spent about the first 15 minutes talking about Chicago and some of the real life experiences that you had growing up in Chicago with people that were like this. You are adjacent to this world of The Sopranos. Guess what, guys? We didn't have any mobsters in Muscatine, Iowa when I was a kid. There was no one pulling up that you had to worry about, you know, taxing my dad's physical therapy business so that he could, you know, rent the building. He owned the building that he had. It was nothing. It was a stereotype. It was something you saw, you know, you saw the mobsters in the Bugs Bunny cartoons. You saw The Godfather. You saw all these things in movies, and that was it. So
what you're saying is there's an opportunity for mobsters in Muscatine. It's untapped territory.
We have organized crime. It's just more on the street gang variety and then the drug trade.
What's the big ethnicity out there running shop?
Well, it's very diverse in that regard. It's one of those things where it's just we didn't have the big black Cadillac where they were your neighbors and you were nice. Now, the city I went to college in, Sioux City, Iowa, was actually Al Capone had a huge part of his operation running out of Sioux City, Iowa. So there were lots of people there who were connected or had family that, you know, had experience with it. But it's just one of those things. I think it's just where you grow up. For me, The Sopranos is it's art, it's not life. And some of the characters I find to be kind of annoying because I didn't grow up around any of those people. So for me, they seem more caricature than actual character. And it can be a little annoying. The Steven Van Zandt character, it's too much for me.
Don't do it.
I know you love him. I know you've had him on your show a lot.
Steven Van Zandt is fantastic. He is fantastic. Here's the thing. Speaking of his character, Silvio Dante, how dare you speak ill of Silvio? I think it's John Magaro who plays the younger Silvio Dante. He's getting a lot of heat because people are like, he's just doing a Silvio Dante impersonation.
That's what I felt.
What do you expect a Silvio to look like at 25? 25 or 30. He's probably going to sound the same. He's not wearing the hairpiece yet. So yes, like some of the younger, I will say I was really impressed with Corey Stahl, who played a younger junior soprano. Ray Liotta hit it out of the park. Ray Liotta actually plays two characters, which is interesting. Spoiler alert. Dickie Maltisante.
I haven't seen it. Is this like a Tyler Durden spoiler alert you just did?
No. Nothing spoiler. No, you're good.
I think it's known that he plays two characters, but like, I don't think I knew that. So yeah, Ray Liotta was great. It's hard to dislike his performance. John Bernthal is somebody that I always will enjoy. He plays Johnny Boy Soprano, Tony's dad. Surprised to see Joey Diaz in the movie, who did a fine job. And then Leslie Odom Jr., who plays Harold.
Aaron Burr in Hamilton.
Yeah, so not only that, but he was Sam Cooke in that One Night in Miami movie, which is fantastic. So there's a lot of really talented people. The last thing I'll say about Many Saints, and I know that David Chase hasn't really confirmed this, and I think it probably would have had to do with if it was more successful at the box office, but the way that things kind of conclude, you could see it would be very easy for them to say, okay, now we're going to do another, you know, story in the Sopranos verse, because Tony Soprano at the end of the movie is like 17, right? So we meet Tony Soprano in 1999 in season one of the Sopranos, and he's probably 45.
Does Michael Gandolfini have the chops to carry his own movie?
Oh, sure. Well, I don't know about that, but I mean, I think if you build in a strong support system. I think Michael did a great job for what he was tasked with doing, which is playing a character that his father made famous. I just don't know if it's going to happen, because this is a movie that cost $50 million. It's made $5 million. David Chase is super pissed with the HBO Max same day release. Although, like Joe said, people binge The Sopranos all pandemic with HBO Max. You have to imagine, and I don't know if HBO, if they're smart, they would release the numbers as far as how many people have watched Many Saints on there. But I know that David Chase is not happy with how it is right now.
Yeah, a lot of those directors and producers for things, you know, we saw Scarlett Johansson in a lawsuit with Disney Plus that got settled, and they're all happy with each other now. So we'll see how that plays out going forward. It seems like there's going to be some sort of battle coming up soon with people who make movies versus people who distribute movies. And that'll be interesting to see. I can understand why David Chase is upset, though. You know, they put, 4 years, as you said, into making this thing, and he wanted it to be a big blockbuster hit. You know, he's already conquered television. He wanted it to be a big thing, and for them to release it same day, and, you know, it just didn't feel like it got the push it deserved. I totally understand where he's coming. I would be upset too. Can't blame him.
And then the opposite end of this, Joel, for you with Venom, Let There Be Carnage, $90+ million opening weekend, not available on any streaming services that are legal. not a big surprise that it did that well. My take was I was a little underwhelmed, but I know you're a Tom Hardy ride or die, aren't you?
I am. As we talked about a few weeks ago when Mike was on and we discussed the movie Warrior, which then all of a sudden I feel like people are listening to us that have a much more influence, because that movie had like a 2-week run where it was talked about on like almost every podcast I listen to. So I feel like we're setting trends. We'll check this out here though. However, I was supposed to see this movie last night, and parenthood got in the way, and so I did not get to go see it. I would have seen it if they had released it to Disney Plus, or HBO Max, because that's honestly, I'm in the other camp that I kind of hope that they figure out a way to get these people paid to distribute this way, because I don't know about you guys, but going to the movie theater is just not an easy thing for me to do with everything else going on in my life. So if I can, kids go to bed at 8:45 and I can pop on HBO Max or Disney Plus or, you know, Prime or one of these things that we seem to all subscribe to, I can watch whatever I want to watch and actually get to consume it. So I was supposed to see it last night and I didn't get to. I'll say this trailer has wreaked absolute havoc in my household because college, we're big college football and pro football watchers, and it's been a huge trailer for that. And my 10-year-old son and my 5-year-old son are absolutely terrified of Venom, and it's caused sleepless nights. It's caused, you know, them to have to come into our room at 2 a.m. and say they thought they saw Venom in their window. Like, it is. I'm glad they've started to dial it back a little bit, but the first couple weeks that this trailer was out, it was causing some sleepless nights in my household. Now, my question, though, Joe, is you're a big Marvel guy.
Yes, love it.
I'm a big Spider-Man guy, and Venom. It's kind of Marvel adjacent. Is it going to work its way into the full blood Marvel universe, the MCU, at some point?
Yeah, I follow a lot of YouTube channels and other accounts. TikTok accounts are actually really big right now in Marvel. They update you on the news and what they speculate and some other things like that. So for the listeners who don't know, Marvel kind of has what they call the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And Spider-Man was owned by Sony. Like, Marvel owns it, but they had licensed it to Sony way back before they came up with the idea of just doing our own studio. So in order for Spider-Man to join the MCU with this Tom Holland version of Spider-Man, they'd have like a special deal worked out with Sony that almost went away, and then they did rework it, but that deal did not include Venom. So I think there's talks of working it in, Venom and all that. I wouldn't be surprised within the next couple of years, Disney just says, what do you want? We'll pay you for Spider-Man and all those other properties, give them back. Because X-Men and Fantastic Four were both with Fox, and then Disney bought 20th Century Fox.
Right.
So now they're going to work in X-Men and Fantastic Four characters. Mm-hmm. So there's probably a plan to bring in Venom 2. Nothing set in stone yet, all speculation. And right now what's going on in the MCU with this next phase, because the movies kind of come out in phases, is the multiverse. And they're going to use this multiverse thing to kind of, you know, I bet a bunch of things branch off, and then when they snap it back into one universe again, then you're going to have the X-Men and Fantastic Four and all these things that didn't exist previously are going to exist. It's going to be this whole new universe. And, you know, and a lot of these stories are right from the comic books. And what they do a great job of is they take enough from the comic books to keep the diehard, obsessive fans who go way back and read every issue as soon as it comes out happy. And then they got like the people like me who didn't follow the comic books religiously, knew of the stories, but you know, I came in pretty late to this Marvel game. They keep me excited and not so lost where I'm like, wait, who the hell is this person now? So they do a really good job of balancing both, and they do some stuff better. I know people who followed the comic books like, you know, religiously, and they're like, you know what they did for the movie, better than the comic book. You know, and some nerds aren't, I don't even want to call them nerds, let's call them dorks, because nerds turn into a decent enough better word. Well, because, right, you know what I mean, like I hear some people say, oh, I'm a big nerd, I'm into wrestling, I'm into Marvel, and I'm like, those are insanely popular things. You know, it's not like you're on the fringe. I think nerd is now just a better way of saying you're passionate. You could be a football nerd, I consider myself a baseball nerd, so anyway. But a dork is someone who just has to be like, well, let me tell you why I didn't like it, because on page 7 of the original issue, Black Widow had a white jacket on, and then they had a black jacket on, and that, and it's like, do you even care about the comic books? See, those people are the ones.
No, like, I don't. Right, you're boring. That's my answer, is no. Just spoon feed it to me so I can just consume the content and not have to flicks. Think.
But that's exactly, that's exactly what Venom Let There Be Carnage is. It's so, not to spoil anything, but if you saw Venom, there's two of them. One of them is Woody Harrelson, who's hard to not love. And then I will spoil the credits scene, because it's out there, to Joe's point. It is on TikTok, and it was spoiled, much to the chagrin of Andy Serkis, the director, and Tom Hardy. But in the credit scene, Eddie and Venom, an event happens, and they are pulled into the Tom Holland Spider-Man universe. And all of a sudden, there's Tom Holland as Spider-Man on TV, and then Venom licks the screen. So I think what that's setting up is that obviously whatever is going to happen with, to Joe's point, the Doctor Strange and the madness of the
multiverse of madness,
whatever. So they're bringing all these things together. There'll be a Sinister Six movie, probably. Here's the thing, guys, like, it's crazy to me that Iron Man 1 didn't come out that long ago, but it feels like it came out 35 years ago. I mean, Marvel has orchestrated this universe. Kevin Feige is either the smartest person alive or he has the smartest team around him, because just when you think they're done and Iron Man and Thanos are snapping at each other, they've just got more and more. They're just going to continue to be rich, right? They're going to continue to be rich. They're going to make popcorn films. They're going to make thought-provoking films. And what I do admire about Marvel, even though I'd be more of a self-proclaimed DC fan, because we all know The Dark Knight's the best comic book movie ever, no question, is that Marvel takes a lot of risks with who they hire to direct some of these features. And I like that. I admire that about them, that they're not afraid to take a chance on somebody that's done like indies and say, hey, we know you did the Sugar baseball movie filmed in Davenport, Iowa, but you guys are going to do Captain Marvel. Not that that was the best movie ever, but they continue to take risks and they're doing fine. I like
Captain Marvel.
They're doing
fine. I liked it enough too. They haven't had a real miss since like Thor: The Dark World, I feel like.
Right.
I mean, there's been a few that were like, that was just all right, but still, like, it is amazing how many hits they've had, and they keep it rolling too. They've really creating this whole universe. It makes it so that if people who aren't like diehards will still go see a movie. Yeah, I remember hearing a friend go to see Ant-Man, and he's like, I don't know who the hell Ant-Man is. I didn't know there was an Ant-Man. I didn't follow it. I like Paul Rudd, I guess, but you know, whatever. And then I'm like, well, why are you going? Because this is before I really got into it. And he's like, well, I want to see the credit scene at the end because it's going to tie everything. You know, you just want to be lost going forward. They keep their fans guessing enough. And I think their fans love the speculation too. Like with the TV series, especially every week, it was like, I bet this person's going to show up in WandaVision or this person, you know, it's a whole thing. Mm-hmm. And they keep them guessing and they give their fans what they want, which is all, you know what I mean? We've all seen no spoilers, I guess. Although if you haven't seen Endgame by now, what are you doing? Right. But just watch, go to YouTube and watch Endgame live theater reactions. It is like a Game 7 and Super Bowl rolled into one for those who were there opening night. That's one of my biggest regrets that I wasn't. I got into Marvel more so during the pandemic because I had Disney Plus. I was able to catch up. I caught up and I'm like, oh, I'm such an idiot. I should have been following along. I wish I was at the theater for that opening night. Damn it. But then my son was born the day before, so my second son, so I probably wouldn't have been able to go anyway, but.
Right,
that was one of our first podcast episodes was Infinity War was
and that's, listen, these are all pre-pandemic shared experiences, giant movie theater. You know, I probably personally wouldn't rush out to see Venom again, but I also I'm so torn as we debate these three pieces of content, because I watched Many Saints from my house. Let There Be Carnage, Venom is fine, did huge, obviously. But then I really feel like, Joe, for you, with this Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings, like
Shang-Chi.
This is a global phenomenon that I think people, I don't know if people were surprised with how well it did or how well it was received, but maybe Marvel was like, all of a sudden they've got, you know, a whole other set of characters that again are interwoven into the fabric of the Marvel universe, but this has really been a huge deal for them.
Yeah, I'm already seeing the toys at Target. I walked through a Target the other day, saw the toys. I loved the movie. I was a really big fan of it, and I knew nothing of the character going in. I mean, I think I did a quick Wikipedia background and all that. And this movie was announced a while ago. This movie was filmed, I feel like, in 2019 or something like that, and it kept getting pushed back because, you know, the release date of Black Widow got pushed back and everything. And I know the Eternals because another comedian who has an Iowa connection through college, Kumail Nanjiani, is in the Eternals. And we have mutual friends. I consider him a friend. I haven't talked to him in years though. But anyway, he got so jacked up. It was a big story. Like, he got huge.
Yeah.
But although Brido always claims that he's low key jacked, the Kumail's always been like actually in shape. He just is extra in shape for this movie.
I mean, I don't know. I think he's always been low key. Like, I wouldn't use the word jacked. I'd say fit. I think he was always in good shape. You know what I mean?
Did that come up in your interview with him, Tony? When you interviewed Kamale and Emily,
he wasn't ripped in the big sick. Like, he was, you know what I mean? Like, he was, I don't know. The dude he got super jacked. And like, he just on Kumail on Instagram today posted pictures from his GQ photo shoot, which is like, it's just crazy. That he's in this universe now. But yeah, no, I think you're right, Joe. I think they did film that in 2019. And that's what's so crazy at this for these actors. They did this work and then it just gets shelved and they didn't know for a while if it was going to be released. And then it does. And it's a huge phenomenon. Like, I mean, I can't even imagine for that cast. You do this work, you probably tell your family and friends like, oh, I'm in a Marvel movie, and then they don't get to see it for almost 2 years. Like, how does that play? You know?
So let me tell you, ask this question. I haven't seen it. I got to be honest, it wasn't on my radar to see. Why do I need to see it? As far as how it is it integral to the next rounds of the Marvel universe?
Yes, I won't say what the post credit scene was, but it's a big post credit scene. We were like, oh damn, where okay. are they going with this? This is big, you know. And why you should see it? They do a really good job blending, you know, the origin of this part of the world, and you know, we know so much about the heroes that were going on in America in this universe that is Marvel, and so them to show the other side of the world and how things, you know, they're showing Wakanda a little bit and some other things, and but they do a great job like doing the martial arts scenes, like kind of like an old school martial arts movie, while making it still feel like a Marvel movie. But it does have a different feel than other Marvel movies because of it. There's some good humor. The action's great. The story's really strong.
Awkwafina's in it, right?
Yeah, she's great. And I was never really a fan of hers. I didn't know. I mean, I'm not saying I wasn't a fan, but I didn't know her work other than she was in this really annoying commercial. And I didn't like the commercial. But I didn't know, like, she's like in a sitcom, I think, too, or something.
Yeah.
I've heard she's good. Yep.
She's in that Ocean's 8, too. She was in that world.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I highly recommend it. I want to go. My wife didn't get a chance to see it with me. I saw it with a comedian friend of mine, and I was telling her, I'm like, if you want to go, I'll gladly see that movie again.
Yeah,
because it was just good entertainment.
And I'm the guy that hasn't seen the movie but read the synopsis, the plot, whatever, and then found the post-credit scene. And Joe, you're right. It's wild what happens. See,
and I'm not on TikTok. Absolutely
wild.
I'm not on TikTok. Yeah, so
you
I'm going to be 40 in 8 weeks. I'm not getting on TikTok.
No, it's not. You know what it is? Everyone thought it was just a bunch of teenagers dancing. I feel like some of the most popular accounts, you know, I follow a few people that are like in their late 30s, early 40s, who are doing Marvel content or doing movie reviews and all that kind of stuff. Most of them are pretty good, where they'll say spoiler alert, 3, 2, 1, and they do that for you to, you know, scroll away real quick. A lot of other stuff is like DIY stuff, like on there. I think it started off with a lot of teens dancing, and then the TikTok people were like, well, this isn't going to last forever. Okay. This isn't a sustainable way to build a big social media platform and all that. Like, you guys just do audio for your podcast?
We're pretty basic right now. We don't have a lot of time to do,
which is totally fine, by the way. Some of my favorite podcasts only do audio. I was just curious. I'm only saying that because, Joel, your background is really what my background is. I'll take this camera on.
Yeah, no, I
look, this is just a regular basement.
That's awesome.
But so I'm in my storage room
so behind me is $10 wallpaper I got off of Amazon that I had learned about on TikTok on how to, like, you know, make your studio on the cheap or whatever. And it just sticks to the wall there, so it makes it look a little professional.
I'm actually in the process of building a recording studio down here in my basement, because I do some
cheap suggestions.
No, I do some freelance like music arranging and voiceover work and stuff like that. So I got contracted to sing a couple jingles this week, Tony. I'm going to be singing some jingles for the Omaha radio market. So
holy moly! Congratulations!
Congratulations. Yeah,
live from your Dexter murder basement. It's Omaha Jim's fish and chip Friday, everybody. What's that echo? Oh, that's my radon kit. It's just my voice is just dinging off of the radon. Hang on, let me.
The wife just put a load of laundry in. That's what you're hearing.
The echo sound is my water softener that I'm just singing into the tank.
Listen, guys, I know you're both very poor, but I'm in my sunroom, which is a room that we don't use.
So. In your home on the historic registry.
I don't want to brag, but behind me, you'll see we have a non-working gas fireplace and then an older picture of the house that we live in. So
it looks nice. I like it.
We're doing very, very.
That's why I didn't call you out.
Well, when Joe comes and does a show in Muscatine, well, he can get a tour of our houses too.
That's right. So. All right. It's going to be this is tough. So, Joe, we typically like try to really narrow down a winner. I feel like I don't, and this is where I like the Many Saints of Newark. I don't think that I could put that ahead of, even though I haven't seen Shang-Chi in the mispronunciation movie. I apologize. I don't think that Many Saints nor Venom are remotely better. I mean, I don't think they're in the same conversation. I mean, I know Venom is kind of in the same world, but as far as what's going to last, what people are going to go back to time and time again, what you're going to tell your friends and family to watch, it's, I don't think it's going to be Venom or Many Saints. What do you guys think?
That's fine with me.
I agree. I think
no one gets a prize here for winning, so it's just a matter of
Right. You know, I haven't seen Many Saints, so it's hard for me to judge. I haven't seen. I was in Cincinnati last week, and I was supposed to see it, but in that meeting up at the front. Anyway, though, I don't know. There's just something about this seems like a real pivotal movie. Like you even said, you saw the end scene that we won't spoil for anyone on TikTok. And yeah, it just, there was a lot to love about it. I really thought the fight scenes, they did a really cool job of, they're opening up a new world. They just did a lot of things where I was like, you know, you're really into it. And they blended in some humor and heart. They kind of like, they checked off everything you would check off to round out a really great movie.
Yeah, 100%. I think it can absolutely go on to win. For this week's portion of the battle, at least. And you're right, without spoiling that scene, when Lou Ferrigno showed up, I was like, holy crap.
Right?
I can't believe it. They're going back to the original Hulk. Wow. This is shocking. They did. They went all the way back.
2001.
Yes.
Sat next to Lou Ferrigno on an airplane.
Boy. Here we go.
Me and Lou Ferrigno.
And
I was like, I was too shy to like, he's partially deaf too, so I didn't want to be like, hey, like super loud on an airplane.
He seems like the nicest guy ever. Yeah. And maybe that's just because we both love what is it?
I love you, man.
Yeah, and he's so great in that.
I think I'm 6'2" at that time, 278, playing defensive tackle at a Division II school, and I'm sitting next to the Hulk. Like, we were not comfortable. So it was just like the stewardess or the flight attendants just felt sorry for us. So he did end up getting bumped up to first class about midway through the flight. It was from Omaha to San Diego, and I don't know what he was doing in Omaha, but he was flying back to San Diego.
He was probably singing jingles for the, the fish and chip place that you're moonlighting for.
The old spaghetti works.
That's right. All right, listen, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and just kind of do some quick hitters of some new content that's going to drop this week here on The Buffer. Hang tight. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to The Buffer. It's good to be with you. Special edition of the show this week. We're joined by the very funny Joe Kilgallen, who has his own podcast and doing stand-up comedy. Joe, you said you were in Cincinnati. Were you doing stand-up in Cincinnati? Is stand-up back? Are we there?
Yeah, Sam's back. The clubs in Chicago have been open for they've only been open at full capacity for a few months. I think things started up like late March, April, where it was like minimum capacity. I don't know what they were doing at first, like 25%. Then it got boosted up a little bit. But yeah, I've been mostly doing stuff in Chicago, Midwest overall. You know, I went to Davenport, Iowa, as close as I've been to you guys, to do the Renwick Mansion, mm-hmm. which was phenomenal. And then I've been in St. Louis and Cincinnati recently, but staying mostly Midwest, Chicago in particular.
I plugged your Bolingbrook shows the last 2 days at work. So I work with a company that our production facility is actually in Bolingbrook. So I'm on the phone with Bolingbrook people all day long. And so I was like, hey, you got to go check this guy out. So,
oh, thank you very much. Yeah,
I actually copied your dates off of your website. And I sent a mass email out to my Bolingbrook people.
That's so awesome.
Thank you, Joel. I really appreciate that, man. That's amazing. Yeah, Bolingbrook will be at CG's Comedy Club, which is in a real nice mall area there, the Promenade. So yeah, Bolingbrook on October 15th and 16th. It's a Friday and Saturday. I was in Cincinnati at Chameleon's Pizza. Cincinnati's a cool town. Had some fun there. And yeah, for the most part, though, staying in Chicago, I'll probably start branching out. And the thing is, as a comedian, I feel like when things opened back up, it was like a gold rush. Every comedian was trying to fill up every club date. There are clubs I've been a regular at for years. I hit them up and they're like, we're booked up through the winter almost. And I'm like,
oh, crap.
Good God. And I feel like a lot of these big names that knew they couldn't get on theaters quite yet because there was capacity limits, I think they swiped in and kind of bumped some of us young comedians on the rise.
Yep.
Because I'm still young, and kind of pushed us a little bit to the side. But that's okay. That's okay. No big deal. I'll be kicking ass in 2022.
I tell you what, I miss Penguin's Comedy Club in the Quad Cities. It was a lot of, and again, bigger names, whatever, but it was just a great venue. John Lajoie, from who a lot of you are going to know, from the league, right? So, but I knew John Lajoie as a guy that made really funny videos on break.com back in the day. And like, we became friends with him, and he would do phone interviews with us from Canada, where he lived, and we would play as much of his songs as we could because some of them were super offensive. And then he just gets this big break, and the next thing I know, we're hanging out at Penguins, and I just miss it. I feel like where we're at, which is not far from where Joe is in the Chicago area, there was a great home for stand-up comedy for 30 years with Penguins, and I just wish we could get another spot like that where we are, because people in this area like to go out, they like to have a good time. And Joe, to your point, like, we would love the $10 to $25 ticket, get in, 2-drink minimum, you know what I mean? Like, we're missing that in this region. Like, I think somebody in Cedar Rapids has just bought out the last Penguins and is maybe going to try and make a go at it, but it's also a very tough business. Right,
it'd be great. It is a tough business. I had done the Penguins in Cedar Rapids a few times, so yeah, hopefully there's a club in Cedar Rapids or in the Quad Cities again soon. That'd be nice. I know a lot of funny people in Iowa, and I know they're jonesing for another club. And yeah, I know
the Englert Theater in Iowa City is bringing some acts in, but they're kind of tied in with Hancher. I mean, that's more of the theater, bigger crowd. I know I got tickets. I'm going to go see Kinane there in November. He's going to be in Iowa City. And
he's great.
Yeah. And
I thought you were just going to try and say the Hancher, where like Steve Martin and Martin Short, where they're bringing in kind of big names.
They had Norm McDonald there. That's where Norm was. True.
Right. I was like, wait a minute. You can't, like, the Hancher, they have, you know, they bring in.
No, that's the thing, is we need something where.
Oh, we need it. Bad.
And Tony, you and I have talked about
that. You need something that's, you know, your typical. Theaters are great, but it'd be fun to see. Well, Kinane's at the theater level. He probably personally wants to just go do one show for 500 people and then, you know, but there's still something cool about doing a comedy club where you're there for the weekend.
Yep.
And, you know, you get to soak in, you know, the town, which is kind of fun. You go to a different city and you're like, all right, I'll check this out during the day, check that out. And you get
I've been to that.
You're working out the hour every night for, you know, 5 or 6 shows. And it's kind of, you know, there's a fun little after party afterwards and, you know, things like that. So that's where comedy clubs are pretty cool. And then, yeah, the bigger names want to go to a theater. That's great as well.
And you get to wake up on the Friday morning and go to the local morning zoo radio show, right? Like, those are all those are the best.
Michigan, Apple.
Oh, hey.
Welcome back.
One in Cedar Rapids. I was on local TV in Cedar Rapids.
Why do they suck at like, so Bob
you
and Tom.
You were one of them. You were one of them.
Bob and Tom are awful. Like that radio show is terrible. The one guy retired. It's never been funny. That's a hot take. But what I did steal from Bob and Tom was their producer would always pre-screen comedians and just say, hey, give us four things you want to talk about. And all of their interviews with comedians would go well because they knew a couple of things and then they would just let them go. And that's where you had a lot of those legendary viral moments from that show. And that's what we would start to do. Like Penguins would have people in all the time because, you know, as funny as Jennifer Coolidge is at 8:30 in the morning, she's like half awake. But if you can ask her like, hey, four things real quick, and then you're off to the races. And Stifler's mom is the funniest thing ever. But yeah, I just wonder for you, Joe, that's got to be such an interesting experience because they just kind of like shuffle you in. And then, you know, there's this awkward moment where they're not on the air. And like if it's co-host, do they get along? And then all of a sudden they turn it on and you're like, you're just pulled right in, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few that have been pretty great, but there's also a couple where, you know, you just kind of shuffle in there and you're like, I hope they don't notice I haven't showered yet. And and now I got to be real cheery. And then you throw a joke out there where they're like, okay. And you're like, oh, you're too dumb to even realize I just made a joke. Okay, that's fine.
I love it. Tony and I had the experience. We got to interview Colin Quinn several years ago when we were on the radio. And I think he was surprised the two guys in Iowa knew as much about comedy as we did. Like we were asking him like real questions about, you know, dog whistles and, you know, how sometimes he was going to be in the Quad Cities for a show and he was promoting his book too. And it was like, sometimes some of these guys, they don't necessarily realize that, you know, us radio guys here in the middle of the country, we just have chosen to stay in the middle of the country. We could have been other places and been your normal hang if we had wanted to.
They think definitely. Schmucks. We're not schmucks. All right. We're kind of schmucks.
We're Nashville schmucks. Nashville level right. Schmucks. Go ahead, Joe.
I can't remember her name. She was one of the female hosts for the morning TV show in Cedar Rapids. And, you know, I lived in LA, I lived in Chicago, and I've done all these morning shows. I was like, that woman's the hottest in the country. She was beautiful. I can't think of her name. If anyone's listening who's like, I know the Cedar Rapids morning girl he's talking about, she was stunning. So, yeah, I mean, she probably easily could have gone in any bigger market if she wanted to. But, you know, maybe she's from Iowa and she loves it there. And, you don't need to go to New York or LA. Everyone always has this whole thing where it's like, you got to go there. I'm like, maybe 40, 50 years ago or maybe 20 years ago in whatever industry you're in. But I feel like the world's even more connected now where if you got a good product and you like what you do, you don't need to, you know, go to a coast.
And, you know, one of the things that's kind of on those morning zoo talk shows or the things that you are sometimes good icebreakers or anecdotes is to kind of get talking about something we talk about on this podcast, which is our guilty pleasures. Like some things that maybe people would be surprised are our go-to TV shows or books or YouTube clips or whatever. And that's a weekly segment that we have on this. And you shared one with me on Twitter, Joe, that I kind of plugged in here because I'm intrigued by this because I tried to give your show a season and it didn't stick for me, and I'll kind of explain why. But mine, and it's another, we bring up Kumail a few minutes ago, but this is a show that Kumail Nanjiani's in, and I can't turn off Silicon Valley when it's on, and I know the cast has some problematic members. I know TJ Miller's been canceled and so has Thomas Middleditch and whatnot, but this show, the Mike Judge show, Silicon Valley, I've been a part of some startups. I've helped three companies begin in my life and sell and grow and do all that. And it's a stressful time, but there's just something about that world of startup and venture capital desire that this show has captured that I just can't turn it off. It is so funny. Those brainstorming sessions of 20-year-old guys where you're saying the worst possible things to one another, but somehow some kernel of brilliant business acumen comes out of it. It's just pretty remarkable. I call it the sleepover effect. It's the things that kids, like the young boys, talk about on a sleepover that usually turn into maybe being some great ideas. That's what this show reminds me of.
I like that show. That's a good show. I forget. It went off the air, what, 2 years ago, though?
Yeah. And so I started to rewatch it a couple of weeks ago. The whole compression theory and the speech where they're they're figuring out. I'm not going to go into too many details because it's hands down one of the raunchiest monologues that I've ever heard. But
it's... Yeah, Tony, if I could interject, though, to Joel here, that doesn't sound like a guilty pleasure, though. That was a pretty popular show and definitely aimed at your age demographic. I always thought a guilty pleasure is something that you're like, slightly embarrassed I'm into this.
I'm just, people aren't shocked. I'm pretty embarrassing as a person, so I don't know.
I got you.
My guilty pleasures, I don't know. I love Pioneer Woman on the Food Network. I don't know.
There you go. All right.
I just saw Bobby Flay's leaving the Food Network. After
what? He's like a 48% shareholder.
What's he gonna do? He's gonna
By the way, people tell me I look like Bobby Flay, so anytime he makes the headlines, I shake my head because I know I'm gonna hear a bunch of Bobby Flay jokes.
Nice.
I get Andy Dalton, who just got benched by the Bears, thankfully, and I get Bobby Flay. So yeah.
You do look like Andy Dalton. That's
now that you say that, yeah, it's true.
Freshman year high school, my locker mate said, you look like Dudoff Roseanne. And I was like, John Goodman? He was like,
I can see that a bit.
Yeah, Dudoff Roseanne. And I was like, oh, fat white guy? Thank you. Yes, that's me. I'm 14. You hurt my feelings. Thank you. guilty pleasure for me, because this is a guilty pleasure that's also very good, but I didn't know it was going to be good. My wife likes Jake Gyllenhaal.
Who doesn't like Jake Gyllenhaal?
He's not my favorite. I like him just fine. I'd interview him and hang out with him, but like I didn't know if I was going to watch The Guilty on Netflix. That was just released. It was one of those things. I was like, okay, we're watching this because somebody thinks that Jake's not ugly in my house, which would be my wife. And The Guilty was a huge surprise, and maybe it shouldn't have been since Antoine Fuqua directed it. It's really good. It's essentially Jake Gyllenhaal, Los Angeles, some controversy took him off the streets. Now he's a 911 dispatcher, and the whole movie takes place from his perspective on the phone with there's nothing else. Like it's a really interesting
approach. It phone booth-ish? Is that kind of like what's
kind of, yeah, but it was just really well done. There's a little bit of a twist or a curveball, if you will. And, I just kind of flew blind into it. I was the whole time I was like, I'll probably look at my phone. Like, I don't need this. And then I was just hooked. So, worth checking out. Very surprising. And maybe, I mean, obviously Jake's done a lot of good stuff, right? But I just thought, okay, this is just like, if she wanted to watch something with like Ryan Reynolds, who again, I also love, right? But like, it's like The Notebook. Like, I still haven't seen The Notebook. I'm never going to watch it. At this point, why would I? Just like Titanic. I know what happens.
You love your wife? I don't.
Yeah, I do, but not that much. But The Guilty on Netflix is really good. And Jake is awesome. And I recommend it.
All right, I'm going to have to dive into that because the trailer looked actually pretty good for that. Now, my guilty pleasure, I don't know if Joel said the name of it, it's called The Outer Banks, which I think is pretty true guilty pleasure because it's not like something you hear a lot of 37-year-old. I'm now 37. I only just turned it, so I think I was 36 when I started. Not that makes it better. You don't hear people like me being like, dude, you check out this show about 17-year-old kids.
The Outer Banks in North Carolina.
Outer Banks, North Carolina. And here's the one part of it I don't dig is that it's a whole like that side of the island or the banks or whatever, that's where all the rich people are. This side's where all the poor people are. And it's kind of has this whole like greasers and socias thing, you know? And I'm almost
That's a great outsider's call.
Right? That part's a little cheesy to me, but I don't know. I got roped into it. I put it on randomly. And I don't know. I just got hooked in the mystery of it. They're trying to figure out this thing, and there's a big shipwreck, and they're trying to find like the gold in this ship, and I don't know. I think because I had a birthday coming up, I started to dive into it because I'm like, oh, this is about young kids who have their whole lives ahead of them.
Midlife crisis.
They're not slowly dying, right? They're 17 and still very attractive. I looked that good at 17. At least maybe I thought I did in my own brain. But yeah, I don't know. It's I got roped into it, and there's two seasons, and I watched both seasons, and they did a good job with some cliffhanger stuff. Some of it's a little obvious, some of it's a little corny, but overall, there's I like it. I recommend people give it a go.
I think that the reason that I had to bail on it, I tried. When it first hit, I got a text from some college buddies who were like, this is a great show. And it was the guys that we watched The OC together in college. And I think that that's, it felt very, I felt offended that they were trying to recreate The OC magic and they just couldn't do it. So I had to bail. So I might have to revisit it though. I don't know. Maybe it was just the wrong place, wrong time for me to give.
Yeah, I wasn't an OC guy, so I didn't see that. But it's definitely like, you know, it's teens. You know, I mean, all the actors, by the way, are like 23.
Yeah, it's like Cobra Kai. It's you know, the whole Cobra Kai effect. Those kids are like 22, acting like they're 16. And
yeah, so that part throws you off every now and then because you're like, she's really attractive. Wait, am I gross? No, she's 23.
Did you guys see the Disney Plus is releasing a new like reboot of Doogie Howser, but it's like Doogie and it's like a Polynesian last name. It's like, it looks like she's on like a Hawaiian island. And it's her first name is Doogie, but it's like I just saw it today flipping through Twitter. So yeah, we're rebooting Doogie Howser.
So we need, right? It was Wonder Years, right? The Wonder Years is
That's not bad. I watched it. It's not bad.
So did I.
I'll give it a check. I understand why they're doing it because it's like brand recognition, name recognition. But every now and then I'm like, can't you just do like a newer version or something different instead of trying to tie it in? Like Ocean's 8. Granted, I didn't see Ocean's 8, but I remember was it bad?
I liked it. Actually liked it. But I'm a sucker for a heist movie. I think they're all good.
Well, that was my point. I'm like, why couldn't they just have an all-female heist movie? Why did they have to tie it into the Oceans? And I'm like, well, because of brand recognitions, the studios, they put a lot of money into this, and they think, hey, we slap Oceans on it. Maybe that'll get a few more people to show up. I totally understand that. I just wish we didn't have to do that.
No, I totally agree 100%. You're absolutely right. It's just kind of like I just saw a promo and it drove me nuts. It was just like the return of Chicago Fire PD Medic. I was like, how many? And I know that's an old take. Like, how many Chicago shows do we need? But like, seriously, that's like a network block of shows like that in 2021 is still going to generate big ratings. And I think the answer is yes. Like,
In one of my pandemic insomnia nights when I was working from home, I started writing like sitcom ideas that I wanted to write someday. And the one that I had was the Chicago Morgue, but it was like a sitcom based off of the coroner who has to deal with all the dead bodies from Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, and awesome. Chicago.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Actually, you should write that. You know?
Yeah.
I know a guy who was from Nebraska and he got flown out to do like some writing jobs on some TV shows because his Twitter account got really popular. I didn't know him well, but there was a Twitter. I don't know if that Twitter account's still active, but it was called like @BadBanana. And he would just tweet funny stuff constantly. And then people got a hold of him and they flew him out to LA so he could help, you know, do some punch up work on some pilots. And I think he got like a staff job on a show, maybe. I'm not sure.
Oh, that's my dream, but that's
my point.
I might have to wait.
A funny idea because Scrubs started off kind of half that. The creator of Scrubs, Bill Lawrence, who also helped develop Ted Lasso, and Bill Lawrence has done a ton of stuff. Really, yeah,
we're Scrubs people here. So
I'm a diehard Scrubs fan, so I'm right there with you guys. I like the Scrubs podcast. I've listened to about 20 episodes of that. It's pretty great. That Zach Braff and Donald Faison do, where they kind of like rewatch the episodes and all that. But anyway, Bill Lawrence was talking about how at the time the drama shows were pretty big. I mean, he had the idea because he had a roommate who became a doctor. I remember thinking to himself, this drunk is going to be a doctor now? How weird is that? But at the time, like ER was really popular. And I think there was another medical drama. So he was kind of like, why not do a medical comedy?
Yeah.
So to do Chicago Morgue, but like it's not really in that universe. It's kind of like giving it a hard time. But
I think the 30-second pitch I wrote on the piece of paper, I don't have it in front of me, is it was Perfect Strangers meets, I can't remember what I said it meets, but it was kind of like one of the guys, Always like Sunny? The janitor in the morgue was like going to be like a Balky Bartakamus type character or whatever. And just kind of an immigrant worker who just finds himself working at the morgue, and the coroner's like, it's an odd couple kind of thing. So not super original, but I think it had potential to be funny.
I think you got to workshop it out. I think it's fantastic. Like, just do it. If that's your ticket out, man, you got
to
do it.
I don't have any reason to get out. I love my life.
You could winter. The show could shoot in the winter in Los Angeles. Right. And then you could come back for summer and fall.
Yeah.
Spring, summer and fall. What do you think?
Genius. It works. Absolutely genius. All right.
You've got to go. So the next thing, we usually do our little funny dad world where we call it dress socks and Crocs, because that's what Tony and I often are wearing when we take the dogs out after work. And then we also have our confessions. So I thought, instead of like doing our true confessions that we hadn't seen, I thought we would confess the things, the movies or TV shows that we can't wait to watch with our kids who are too young now. This stemmed, Tony, from you sending me that gift that was the 1995 Dad's Rated R Starter Pack, right, or whatever. They had like Cliffhanger and T2 and all that stuff. So what are the two movies or whatever that you can't wait for your kids to be old enough to finally get to sit down and watch?
Well, I'm going to go quick just because my laptop's dying and I'm apparently too poor to have a power supply. Just kidding. My wife has it in her work bag at her work. So just today, my mom, at my mom's house, my oldest son, he's 9, went to pick him up after school. And he's like, look what I found in grandma's basement. And it was my 1989 toy Batmobile. Michael Keaton Batmobile, missing, you know, a couple of things, but he's like, look at this artifact I found. And I was like, yeah, man.
It's
like
Indiana Jones.
I just was like, yeah, that's the Batman car, the Batmobile from 1989. I was 6. It was the biggest thing ever. My dad got a Michael Keaton as Batman cardboard cutout that we had at the house. So then I just grabbed my phone and I just pulled up a couple of scenes from Batman. So Batman 89 is something he hasn't seen yet. Because I don't want to do what my dad, which was take us to every heavy-ish movie at too young of an age, like T2 in theaters when I was 8 and my brother was 5. Like, I don't want to do that to them. So for sure, it's for me, it would be Batman. And then this is going to sound weird because it's raunchy and I don't mean it that way, but just, and you could lump a couple of movies together, but I feel like Animal House is something that I thought was so funny, risque, like I shouldn't be watching this. And I was maybe like 13 at the first viewing of that. So I'm not trying to rush into that either, but there's just so many other movies that you can then open Pandora's box, so to speak. So I think Animal House would be in on that list. So Batman 89 and then Animal House, which I know is a little bit of a stretch.
I was 14 when I saw Animal House for the first time, and I remember this vividly because I was at my friend's 14th birthday party in January and they had gotten their hands on the VHS tape. And when the little devil pops up on his shoulder and says, "F her brains out," I felt like I needed to go to confession immediately. My Catholic guilt immediately kicked in, and Tony did have to leave. But I was just, it was jarring and scarring all at the same time.
Yeah, you know, I would tell Tony that he might want to rethink it in a sense, though, because, you know, it's...
That's a problematic movie in a nutshell.
Very problematic. The one part, look, I mean, you know, I'm not going to be that guy or anything like that, because I think you got to look at movies through the time in which they were made. It's a little unfair
sometimes. Like Blazing Saddles. Like,
you know, but that the devil scene, I was too young for Animal House. So when I saw it, I was like 8 or 9. I remember even thinking to myself, this feels like it's too old for me. But I remember laughing because there's some parts that are super funny and it made the college experience look really cool.
Yeah, when Belushi just does the I'm a zit fight thing. Scene. Yeah, and
so
the whole
funny when you're a kid.
The whole speech, you know, that they the whole
when the Germans bomb Pearl Harbor.
When they put Germans bomb Pearl Harbor. I mean, it's a legendary script that's obviously been well documented over time, and there's been documentaries even made about it. But
definitely.
That's a good one. I don't know. I might wait for college when my kids see that one, just because I don't know. It's just as a parent, I don't really want to have to explain some of the things and that's kind of where this came from. So my kids were my 10-year-old was scrolling through Prime Video and he didn't switch it over to the kids' profile. He was still on mine, and I think I just watched like She's Out of My League or some rated R comedy. So it's like making recommendations. Porky's is on Prime Video, and my son asked if he could watch it. And I was like, no, you can never watch this movie. I no, absolutely not. And that's not one that I would really want to sit down and watch, even though it does have former Iowa Hawkeye great Alex Karras in it as the sheriff. But it's we'll figure out other ways to. And he's in Mongo too. He's Mongo in Blazing Saddles, so he's in two movies that I don't know that I'm in any hurry to watch with my children.
Yeah. So when I thought about this, the answer right away, like what movie am I excited to show my kid? I would have thought like, you know, I already talked Marvel enough, so I'm not going to say any Marvel movies because I feel like you guys get that from me already. But yeah, to see like the look on their face, like an Endgame when certain scenes happen, I think, oh man, I want to see that. But I'm trying to think what Major League. I remember seeing Major League when I was like seven. And the one scene where it's like you ever tank a play like that, I'm going to rip your nuts off and shove them down your effing throat. I'm like, oh man, that was cool to me. And I was dead first. That helped get me really into baseball. I was already kind of like, I like baseball cards and stuff, you know, when I was like six or seven, but that really got me into it. And so I think that would be a fun one to show my kid. I thought Ferris Bueller's Day Off is one of my favorite comedies ever. And that's not anything bad. It's PG-13. I could probably show it to him now, but the reason I don't want to show it to him, he's a pretty smart kid, and I feel like he would start to be like, ooh, this is an option. I could pretend to be sick.
I could figure out a way to manipulate. Yeah,
I don't want those ideas in his head yet. So I think Major League's definitely going to be one of them for me. And then maybe, you know, if you're going to go the risque thing, like, you know, like Tony was talking about, I think American Pie would be maybe a better choice.
Yeah.
A little more respectful towards women in that one than, say, Animal House.
Yeah, but not by much, unfortunately.
Not by much. It's... Caddyshack would be a fun one to show them. I'm trying to think what fun rated R comedies would be really cool to show them. But yeah.
You're the right, American
American Pie.
For me, I'm a big sports guy, and American Pie was close. I'm the exact age as the American Pie characters, so when that movie came out, their senior year of high school, I was a senior in high school. You know, the American Pie 2 came out, and it was so that was all. Those were must see movies for my friends and I growing up. But I think for me, Varsity Blues is one that I'm really looking forward to watching. I'm a former college and high school football coach, and my kids know that. And just to, it's a really good football movie. I got panned though because we talked sports movies a few weeks ago, and I picked The Program over Varsity Blues as far as favorite football movies go. But I think Varsity Blues would be one that my kids would enjoy. I also think that my oldest son, who I actually coach his football team right now, he's going to be like, "Oh, you're not funny. Like the oop de oop is from this movie. You when you say that at practice, you're stealing it from this movie." So there's some moments in that. And then the other movie that's like that is, and I just rewatched it over the weekend and forgot how hard I laughed, and that is 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Oh yeah.
That is the jokes per minute in that movie is off the charts. And I went back and watched the blooper reel. I don't know how they ever shot this movie and didn't just all die laughing the whole time. Like Steve Carell in that movie is perfect. And I'm a big Paul Rudd guy. It's Seth Rogen. I mean, that's just the Murderer's Row. That's like the 1927 Yankees of a comedy lineup, really, as far as the 2000s.
Yeah, they definitely ushered in that era there. You know, even before that, I think Old School would be a fun one to show my kids because that was a fun era of comedy movies, like, you know, that Vince Vaughn was in, and Owen Wilson and the Wilson brothers, Will Ferrell movies, you know, some really fun ones there. I got to think of some good revenge movies I can't think of off the top of my head that'd be fun to show your kids. You know, those movies where they're like, hell yeah, you know, I'm glad they got that guy and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, those are always fun. Like, even like Revenge of the Nerds is good. I know that's pretty literal on the nose. It has revenge in the title, but those are kind of fun. Those are kind of fun.
Any revenge movies you can think of? Revenge of the Nerds, Revenge of the Sith.
Well, Dodgeball is probably on this list too for me.
Dodgeball's a fun movie. I got to think of some other, like Stripes would be a good one. Like what movies from my, that I was a kid that I first saw and was obsessed with. I remember being really into Stripes. I had the VHS tape of it. And
I think I'm thinking more along the comedy line just because, yeah, there's going to be a time where I want to sit and watch A Clockwork Orange or A Full Metal Jacket, you know, some of those Kubrick movies with my kids, just because I'm a film nerd, you know, and just to watch some of those movies. But I was 22 when I saw A Clockwork Orange, and I was too young. those are
they should discover on their own in early adulthood, maybe, you know.
Maybe that's one that they come home their junior year of college and they're like, I'm taking a film class next semester. It's like, okay, let's this is what you might see. We could do this. We'll watch Network and then we'll watch A Clockwork Orange and then Citizen Kane, and I'll help you write your paper. So that sort of thing. But no, these are it's fun.
Good category, by the way.
Thanks. Being a parent in these times is interesting, because I would imagine, especially in your line of work, being a comedian, where there's really no topics are off limits, but then at the same time you come home and it's like, you know what, I've got kids that I don't want to, you know, get the parent teacher conference. It's like, well, your kid called me this. And
yeah, I'm very conscious of stuff like that. That's same. The thing when you become a comedian, like I feel like every year I've been a comedian, I've become way more observant of the human condition, you know, because being a comedian, you have to really become like a student of how people react to things, how people interact with each other and all these kind of things. So I'm hyper aware of what I do and what the effect it could have on my kids potentially and all that kind of stuff. But as far as this popped in my head the other day, I'm like, oh man, they're gonna look up these jokes one day. And because I got asked to do some corporate gig not that long ago, and they're like, we think you might be too dirty. And I go, I could do clean. I could do, you know. And they're like, oh, but when we looked you up, I'm like, well, here's the thing about when you look someone up. When you look someone up, the most popular things that they're affiliated with show up first. And I have a joke that's titled Oral Sex, and it's my most popular joke on YouTube, and it's also from 6 years ago. So I realize when I get older, my kids will inevitably type in their own name and it's going to come up, and it's going to be like, oh, cool. I can't wait to hear dad's oral sex joke. So I'm sure that's going to be a real treat for the two of them.
Oh, some girl is going to be dating one of your boys and their parents are going to Google you and see who the parents are. That's going to pop up.
Yeah, definitely.
That's always fun. I say this all the time to my wife, whom I met in college. How thankful I am that YouTube and Facebook didn't exist my first 3 years of college. So like my years of being an idiot on campus aren't documented somewhere by some sort of digital medium. So I'm very, very thankful for that, or else there would be some open mic times or some karaoke nights that escalated quickly. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah, good old days.
Oh, we were back for homecoming a few years ago and had my name tag on, and a kid who was in the same fraternity that I was in walked up and said, "You're Joel Krausar," and I was like, "Yep." And he's like, "You're awesome," and then like just walked away. And my wife goes, "Well, it's settled. Our kids can't go to school here because you know that." You the stories have lived on. I mean, that was 20 years ago. You set the
bar too high.
Oh, it's not. There is too low. I always claim, I told Bridenstine this, I am convinced that one of the writers, Mike Schur or Greg Daniels, or one of these writers for Parks and Rec, were in Omaha some point in 2002. Because I woke up in a tube slide in a city park in Sioux City, Iowa, when I was in college, to like 6-year-old kids banging on the top of the slide, waking me up because I had passed out in this park walking home from a party. And that's the pilot episode of Parks and Rec opens up with that. And that was my opening joke when I was trying to do stand up, was this about being, you know, passed out in a slide and having to slink out and wave at two disapproving mothers as I worked my way out of the slide. So I'm convinced that it's a
different kind of walk of shame.
Yeah, that was what I was all too familiar with. My roommates had a bingo card that said, "Where will Joel wake up Saturday morning?" And it was like a bush, a slide, the middle of the hallway. Like I had a reputation, which isn't a great one, but whatever.
That's awesome.
21 years ago, so I'm now a productive member of society. So all is well.
So you say now.
So I say yes. Well, Joe, I appreciate you coming, and I do want to mention this. Obviously, Southeast Iowa is a huge part of our podcast and listenership, just because of personal networks. You did a few weeks ago an event for Riker Cologne with Club 400. Riker lives here in the community that Tony and I live in, and actually, his dad Eddie and I grew up together. We actually played Little League baseball together, and I coach in the travel baseball organization that Riker's older brother plays in. And so I just wanted to say thank you for Muscatine for helping Brandy and Eddie and Riker out. And it was a great event. And thank you so much for being a part of that.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, thank Club 400 and Eddie and the whole Cologne family for having me be part of it. Yeah, you know, I was emceeing the event and, you know, what a great family, great kid. And, you know, I hope them, you know, all the money we raised, you know, goes towards helping, you know, Riker out and everything
it's
like that.
It's just such a small world that, you know, you get tied in with that. And it's, you know, one of your friends in comedy is Mike Bridenstine, who, you know, happens to also have grown up with the Colognes. And it's just crazy.
Yeah, I love the Colognes. They were all so nice and just great people. And a lot of them were coming up to me and saying, oh, I know Mike Bridenstine and all that stuff. And Eddie would listen to, you know, the Cubs podcast I used to do. And yeah, it was a really good event. And, yeah, just a, you know, great family, and Riker's a really great kid. So we're all really happy to do whatever little part we can.
So you've got a couple shows coming up in Bolingbrook next week. What else is on there that you want to plug, or your podcasts and your social media?
Just, you know, the YouTube channel, youtube.com/JoeKilgallen. I've got nearly 3 hours of stand-up comedy content on there, plus tons of podcast clips and some other fun stuff. My podcast is the Joe Kilgallen Podcast. It's just a comedy podcast, real situational, silly. You know, it's like bar talk, like the stuff you talk about with your friends at the pub, at the bar, or the kind of conversations I like to have with people on my podcast. So if you're into that, give it a check. JoeKilgallen.com. You have the shows in Bolingbrook are next week, October 15th and 16th. Love to sell them out, add a couple more shows, and have a great weekend.
Yeah, looking forward to that. I'm actually coming to the city November 5th and 6th. My wife and I are coming in for the Iowa Northwestern game, and we're going to spend a weekend in Chicago. So I don't know.
I might be a Laugh Factory, so hit me up. I'll see if I can get you on the list.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great. It's an exciting time that comedy is coming back. It's such a fun medium, and very fortunate to kind of have, it's amazing how the quarantine caused you guys to have to kind of get creative, and us as consumers have benefited because of all the great podcasts and, you know, that comedians have created, and also people, you know, talking about the stuff they've already talked about, oral history stuff, and as a consumer and someone who sits in that cubicle and does their job all day, it's nice having those podcasts to keep you company.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. It's a good time for entertainment. It might be a sad time for different parts of the world and for our own lives. And you
well,
know,
I know that you, I mean, it's something that hits you close because your wife is in the healthcare field.
Yeah, and my wife's a nurse who started, you know, worked on the COVID floor as soon as the COVID floor became a thing, became part of our reality, and she's still on it. So yeah, you know, be smart out there, everyone. Take care of yourselves, and all that stuff. I feel like that's redundant at this point to say, but you know,
you have to.
It's one of those things. I'm a dad now. I'm going to always say, look both ways.
Yeah.
So
my wife's a teacher. You know, it's we all got to take care of each other, right? That's all we got to do. No matter what you're looking at, you know, at the end of the day, just take care of one another. Well, what's Jackie Moon, everybody love everybody, and semi-pro, you know, that whole thing. So, well, Joe Kilgallen, thanks for joining us. You're welcome back anytime. This was a lot of fun.
I'll come back, man. Thank you.
And, you know, I'll help you find that pub too to watch some soccer. I grew up, believe it or not, this fat guy was a 4-year letter winner soccer player in high school. And I grew up, I was a sweeper, and my buddies were all big soccer heads and football heads. So, one of the groomsmen at my wedding, my bachelor party was during the World Cup. We went to bed at like 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. and the World Cup started at 4:30. He woke all of our asses up to watch a World Cup game after we'd just gotten about an hour of sleep. So that's I'll watch soccer any day of the week. So we'll go find that pub sometime.
I know nothing about the sport. I want to get into it though. It seems fun.
Roy Kent is the best character on TV right now.
I agree, man. I just got a Roy Kent shirt. My sister got me for my birthday. I'm not wearing it now, but it's like a blue shirt. It says Kent 6 on the back. Like their shirt jersey.
I have never had a show make me laugh, cry, and want to hug my children in almost every single episode, and that's what Ted Lasso does.
Hell yeah, man. I love it. I'm going to go watch another one and go to sleep.
All right, Joe, thanks for joining us.
Thanks again. You're the
best. Appreciate your time. Take care.
Thanks, man.
See you.